Today's program was brought to you by the Wisconsin Cheese Cupid Pairing App, available on Android and Apple devices.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Love Bites, where dining and dating collide, coming at you live from Heritage Radio Network in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today is Monday, January 4th, and this is our first show of 2016.
Hell yeah!
Thanks so much for returning to our second season with us. I'm one of your hosts, Jacqueline Raposo. I write about people who make food. You can find my work and me as wordsfoodart.com. I'm 34, straight, and single.
And I am your other host, Benjamin M. Rosenblatt.
M? I didn't know that. What's the M? Michael?
Michael is my middle name. It's like every guy's middle name.
I'm Marie.
Ooh, Marie. That's every girl's middle name.
We're even cuter.
Oh, aren't we?
Who are you, Ben? What do you do?
You can call me Ben, even though it's Benjamin is the full name. I'm an actor, I'm a writer, musician, occasionally a bartender and server. You can check me out at benrosenblattactor.com. I am 33, straight, and I am beginning this year gut-wrenchingly single.
Gut-wrenchingly single. Oh, God. No. For our second segment today, we're going to be joined by Sarah Eckel, the author of It's Not You, 27 Wrong Reasons You're Single. We're going to ask her about her journey as a writer studying relationships and if she really believes that being single is not our fault. And at the end of the show, we're bringing back the Online Dating Asshole of the Week Awards with a particular large asshole, dry asshole, I don't know, dark, I don't know, an asshole.
Right. Those are just descriptors that have just grossed out our entire listening audience.
I didn't put them into the show form, but I was trying to be like, this guy's a real asshole.
He is a
so we're
going to
talk
one.
About him at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. But first, you might have noticed that we have a new theme song for 2016, and it is by our dear friend Robbie Gill covering The Who, You Better You Bet, from his live album Live at Rockwood.
I'm a huge Who fan, like a huge Who fan, and Roger Daltrey, the singer for The Who, is one of my like all-time favorite rock and roll vocalists, and usually I'm like loath to hear someone try to cover it, but Robbie's voice
it's
is
amazing.
So phenomenal.
The whole album is amazing. So this is his only cover on that album. His song, I don't know, I just love Robbie. I love his voice. I love, like, there are these heart, like, if you're going through a breakup, if you've been an asshole in the breakup too, if it's like your fault why the relationship went down, it's particularly poignant. If you're trying so hard to get to a better place in life, listen to Big Picture. It's one of my favorites. Big Picture is just,
His music is beautiful, and it's also, beautiful. Like, I was telling you, Jacqueline, before the show, that it's like, every time I'm dating a new girl, it's like, I can't wait to, like,
take her to a Robbie
show.
Because he's so talented, and he's our friend, and so it makes you look even hotter.
Yeah, and his music is amazing, and it just, like, gets you, like, in the mood for love.
Yeah. I mean, when I posted this on our Facebook page, I had a guy friend, who years ago I brought him, and he bought the album, and he's like, I still listen to it all the time. And I've brought many a gentleman to see a Robbie Gill show, too. Yeah.
So I think all of our listeners should go check out Robbie's music at RobbieGill.com. That's RobbieGill.com.
He's on iTunes.
And just
on
buy
Facebook.
All of his music, because it's incredible. You won't regret a single cent that you spend on
it. So we're super psyched that he's our theme song for the first season of 2016. And, okay, so checking in for dating. So, well, I mean, all right, so New Year's resolutions, things happen. I'm obviously not resolving not to drink in 2016.
No, because you've got two open drinks sitting in front of you.
Yeah, so alcohol is not on the bad list for New Year's resolutions. But before the holidays happened, I got something done called the ALCAT test. It's a blood test that tells you what foods cause inflammation in your body on a cellular level, which I am doing for the chronic illness that I've talked about a little bit last season. So I'm going to be in a dating conundrum for the next couple of months. For the next 3 months, I've taken 60 more foods out of my diet, basically meaning that I cannot dine at restaurants. Yeah, like I'm going to have to cook cook everything I eat because it's down to things like basil and oregano and thyme and olive oil, like, and garlic, you know, things that I cannot avoid. So I'm gonna, I don't know how I'm gonna.
Well, it's interesting how many dates take place in restaurants. And I mean, I know I am a big fan. I love food. You love food.
That's why we are here on Heritage Radio.
Of course. And so I always just assume that, like, I always plan my dates, first dates and beyond, typically, to be at a bar, at a restaurant, at somewhere where we're eating and drinking.
How people eat is important, too.
Absolutely.
It's definitely a sensual connection.
But, I mean, that doesn't mean you can't have a dating life. And there are plenty of ways to have dates outside of...
Well, luckily, grapes are on the okay list, so wine is all right. And apples, so cider is all right. And potatoes, so vodka is all right.
So you're just going to be, like, getting hammered on all of your first dates? Is that what you're saying?
Probably. It's going to be, like, college all over again. No. But at least, like, one thing I did learn from last year from having this radio show and then all of the just introspective crap that I do on a regular basis. We talked before about like how long it takes me to talk to guys about my health conditions, and I've decided that, you know what, like I'm feeling pretty calm about myself. And the whole food thing, like, it's not a hippy-dippy silly thing that I'm doing. It's to try to better my life. It takes a lot of discipline. It took a lot of money to get this blood test done. It's something I take seriously. And again, I don't feel like it makes me undateable as a human being. And so it's going to have to come up in conversation very early. And that's okay, because I'm not dying. Like, I'm still a dateable, right?
Yes, I mean, agreed. And the way you just said it to me, until the very end when you were like, I'm still dateable, right?
Well, because I didn't want to be like, I'm still, like, awesome, right?
You are.
I
mean, and the way you said it with confidence and like, why you're doing it and just owning it makes it so, if I imagine, as a potential...
Sexy is the word you want
dater,
to use, right?
Well...
just kidding.
not necessarily
Damn
sexy,
it.
But, like, not at all scary.
Thank you. Turning on to you, how is your what is your dating status? Like, I'm back online.
I have a New Year's resolution for dating.
You do? Ooh, what is it?
I do. I haven't shared this with you yet. Do you promise to, like, hold me to it?
Not telling anybody.
I'm telling everyone right now. Do you promise to hold me to it?
Of course.
Do you? You might not want to after I tell you what it is. This is my New Year's dating resolution. I vow in 2016.
You vow? That's a strong word.
Well, I resolve.
Okay.
In 2016. That if the next time someone tells me how great a guy I am and how rare that is as a preface to why they don't want to date me anymore, that I'm going to launch them from the tallest building that I can find.
Hypothetically, right? Like, you know, are you going to literally throw them?
Hypothetically. No.
Ladies, his username is... No, I'm just kidding. No, I get that. Like, yeah, that sucks. And I will talk about this in a couple of weeks when we have the exes conversation. But one of the five guys that I had asked for the answers said something along the lines of, like, he's used to dating women who are, like, dark and dramatic. And I am not that I am light and calm. And I was like, all right, good for you, dude. Like, that's one of the reasons why we don't work out together. Like, that's a little ridiculous. It was a little ridiculous. So I get you with that. It's like, oh, you're too nice and too good of a person. You're too together. It's like, well, then just go away. Then you dark, sad look. I don't know.
Agreed.
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean,
all right. Well, I will hold you to that.
But it also says something about me and the type of woman that I am dating and the type of woman
that
I am. And or not necessarily even look for, but the type of person that I end up being attracted to and wanting to continue dating is the type of woman that continues to say that to me. So, you know, I'm trying to keep myself in check as well.
Which is good. And that's the same thing, like my accidental pattern of being attracted to guys who've gone through something hard. My problem is that they're usually still coming out of the something hard when I want them to be sort of out of the something hard. And so, yeah, we both, I think, accidentally find...
I don't know how
same.
Much of an accident it is,
it's
but
it's an accident
yeah,
on my part.
Yeah.
Anyway. Anyway, all right. So we've got some resolutions. Yeah.
You've got some resolutions. Do you have any dates lined up? Anything? Anyone
I'm
you're excited about?
I'm talking to some couple guys online. It's just...
So
it's
you're
very
back
new.
Online.
I'm back online.
Because at the end of our last season, you were offline.
Yeah, and I felt great about it.
I like was enjoying being offline, but you're back on.
Yeah, because you got it. I mean, we have a radio show, and I'm still single, so of course I'm gonna be back online. I don't take it as seriously right now. I'm letting myself be pickier, that I'm not trying to give too many people the benefit of the doubt. We'll talk later at the end of the show about what happens when I go against my gut instinct and respond to somebody. We'll talk about that. But yeah, no, I'm messaging with a couple of guys who seem lovely enough, and I'm going away for 2 weeks next, so I'm not going to date for the next 2 weeks. So I have that where I don't have to worry about that for another 2 weeks at least. But yeah, so we'll see.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll see.
I have a date on Thursday night.
You do? Oh, right. Yes. Okay. So tell me about this.
I met her online.
Okay. Are you excited? That's not a good way to go into it.
Well, no, listen. I am totally need a distraction right now. As our listeners may remember from the end of last season, I had a couple dates lined up at the end of our last season, one with someone who I'd been seeing for about a month or so. The other was a totally new date. Neither of those ended up panning out. The person I had been seeing for a little while decided that she wasn't interested anymore, and I'm looking for a little bit of distraction.
That's fair.
And this person that I'm seeing on Thursday night, I'm like, actually do have the lowest of the low expectations.
Well, we've talked about that before, that you usually have high expectations and I have relatively non-existent expectations. So maybe you having low expectations. Well, let's just check in about what that does for you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure that I'm not going to be interested in anything beyond hopefully trying to drag her into my bed that night.
All right. That's fair.
But if she's down for that, that might be fun.
Okay. Well, good. Well, good. Ooh, I just burped on the radio. Sorry, everybody. I'm drinking cider.
Listen, she's drinking, like, she's double fisting ciders over there.
I'm not double fisting. It's just, it's been 4 days of nonstop. I just needed a drink today. All right. I think it's time to transition out of here. Hold on, everybody. 1 second. Here you go, Ben. Here, you can use my form. We're roughing it up too.
All right, listen. Okay. We're going to take a quick break.
There we go.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by the author of a book called It's Not You. Her name is Sarah Eckel. But first, we want to invite you to connect a bit more personally with us. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook as Love Bites Radio, and on the web at lovebitesradio.com. And you can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and drop a review there.
Anybody's dropped a review yet.
Just drop some reviews.
We
come on.
Need you.
Even if you hate us, just tell us how much you hate us.
No, don't tell us. No, not on iTunes. You can email that to us, but on iTunes, tell us how much you love us.
Okay, don't do that. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Tell us how much you hate us. But listen, every download and share and review helps, and we sincerely love you for it. So like I said, we're going to take a quick break so you can hear a bit about our sponsor, the Wisconsin Cheese Cupid, and we will be back in a bit.
Listening to this show, you've probably used Tinder, you've probably used OkCupid, and maybe you're bored of these human dating apps. Want to play matchmaker with some more interesting couples? Food couples? Say, drinks and cheese? Well, you can now with the Wisconsin Cheese Cupid app. What beverage complements your cheese? What cheese complements your beverage? Wisconsin Cheese Cupid has the answer. Just choose beverage or cheese in need of a soulmate, and Wisconsin Cheese Cupid will do the rest. Feeling a bit adventurous? Pairing Roulette will create a random yet perfectly delicious pairing for you. So if you're sick of swiping left and right, put aside the dating struggles and make a match that'll satisfy even the loneliest of the lonely. Go to cheesecupid.com or find Cheese Cupid in the App Store. Happy matchmaking.
Feeling all these feelings.
In 2011, Sarah Eccles' essay, Sometimes It's Not You, became one of the most popular essays in the New York Times' Modern Love column. It led her to write her book, It's Not You, 27 Wrong Reasons Why You're Single. I'm going to read a little excerpt chopped up a little bit from her introduction. We are a nation that believes strongly in personal efficacy. If there's something in your life that isn't working the way you'd like, then the problem must begin and end with you. But the myth that we're 100% in control of what happens in our lives makes us extremely hard on ourselves. And single people, especially, so eager to solve this riddle of why, are often willing to accept the premise that some fatal personality flaw is preventing them from finding lifelong love. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with any of us? If we're honest, the answer is probably plenty, but that's not the point. The book then goes on to dispel 27 myths that many of us, her audience is largely single women in their 30s, but extends outwards too, often hear from others about why we are single. We are too picky versus we're too available. We are too intimidating in our success or too desperate. We need to put it out into the universe, or we need to learn to be happy alone. Things like that. It's a complex conundrum that I recommend you go and buy the book and read for yourself. But we've got some specific questions we're excited to have Sarah on via phone to answer. You can find her on Twitter as Sarah Eccle, on Facebook as Sarah Eccle Books, and on Goodreads. Welcome to Love Bite, Sarah. We're so excited to have you on the phone today.
Hi, great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we're just going to jump right into it. While writing this book, or now that it's out, it's been out for a while now, what was or is still your goal as to what you want readers to take away from it?
I was really hoping that readers would start to stop seeing themselves as a problem to be solved, because that was, when I was reporting the book, and even I had started reporting the book actually before I published the essay, the through line that always came through when women would talk about their dating lives and their frustration was always like, well, what's wrong with me? And so I really wanted women and men to stop seeing themselves that way, that simply because they are single and they'd rather not be, that there is something wrong with them, and instead just see themselves as just whole and wise and weird and wonderful, but no matter what their various qualities were, always worthy of love.
Now, you didn't get married until your late 30s, and when you started your work in this, you were single. Was there a point in your personal life where you realized it's not me? Like, did you feel throughout that period that you were lacking in something, or, you know, what happened to make you sort of be like, no, it's not us. We are, like, especially because in the book, you do talk about how you did a lot of work. People said, you know, you've got to try this, you've got to do that. And you did a lot of work and you still found yourself single. So were you beating yourself up for that? Or was there a point where you're like, no, it's not me?
I beat myself up for a very long time. I wrote a lot of pieces for women's magazines, and you know, and they're also called service magazines. And the idea is that you have to provide kind of 10 steps or a certain number of steps to help the reader solve their problem. And so I wrote a lot of pieces about, you know, just sort of why you're single, how to become more ready for love, open to love, and all these things. And they were fine stories, but I sort of use myself as part of that, as a self-improvement project. So I took acting lessons to develop more confidence, in yoga to get more grounded and centered, and all kinds of stuff like that. And I was just working so hard. And at one point, a friend of mine said to me, I was complaining about it, and I was being incredibly annoying as I was complaining about it. And she said, well, you're not going to find anybody until you get right with yourself. And I said, what do you think I've been doing this whole time? And I kind of rattled off all the stuff I've been doing, and I said, everybody that I know who's married, they're not these perfectly self-actualized people. Why do I have to meet this standard? And so it was kind of this, it was a very uncomfortable confrontation, but afterwards, I realized that I had been asking people, what I was really wanting from people was to tell me that I was okay and that I didn't have to meet this standard. And that conflict kind of made me realize that I needed to believe it myself. And I finally did. It finally occurred to me that this is just dumb luck, that I'm fine, that I'm just as worthy of a relationship and as capable of a relationship as anybody else. It just hasn't happened yet.
Do you think... hi, Sarah. Nice to meet you. I'm
hey.
Ben. Do you think there is any correlation? There's this moment in your book towards the end where you share an anecdote describing your feeling like you were okay and that there wasn't anything wrong with you and this moment of discovery of self-love and that you had found your basic goodness. Do you think there is a link between that moment at all and the fact that then you found a relationship shortly after, or are those unrelated incidences?
Well, it was about 3 years, so it wasn't like, you know, a lot of these stories, it's like, and then the next day I found him. You know, it was still a number of years went by before I met my husband. And so I don't really, and I think that I have faith that he would have liked me, even my more neurotic, less confident, less secure self. I think he's still, I think we just have, we have a lot in common. We're very compatible. We have a really good connection. I think he would have liked me anyway. But what I have noticed is that all of that work I did, it has made me better at being in a relationship. All of the becoming all right with myself, like getting right with myself actually was a good idea. It just wasn't the thing that put me in the various place that enabled me to meet my husband, but it has made me better at navigating relationship.
Do you think that being in the place to meet your husband is a total random coincidence, or is there anything that led to that moment?
Well, what led to that moment was I got a phone call from my old employer asking me if I could fill in for a little while for somebody who was away. I did not want to take the job, but I was broke, so I took the job, and my husband was there. So I don't really see, there was nothing really I did. There was no way that I empowered myself. I actually didn't want to go, but I needed the money. So it was this one person not being there and me needing the money that led to it.
So I love how at one point in the book you talk about how, or actually it comes up a little bit several times, how we don't have really the audacity to ask married people why they are married, but we often ask single people, why are you single? As if, like you'd said, there is some fatal flaw. And Ben and I have often talked about the debate between being in the right place at the right time or how prepared you are. You mentioned in the book being single sort of by chance because you just haven't met that person. How much do you believe it is just about having not met that person? And Ben and I sort of still disagree a little bit about how, like, you could just not meet. I think you sort of, in a way, just could not meet the person, that it's not in your control completely. But what would you say as far as, like, do you think everybody, I guess the question is, do you think everybody will find the person? Do you think that some people will just be single through no fault of their own?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's like saying you think everybody in the hospital will get better. It's just like life isn't fair, and we don't all get what we want. But just because you don't get what you want doesn't mean there is something wrong with you, that there's a pathology. It just means you didn't get what you wanted. And I think it's entirely possible that had I not taken that job in 2005, that I would still be single. It's entirely possible. So I think that one just simply does the best they can. And in terms of this, I think this issue of how much control one has is a really interesting one. And there's a Buddhist saying that I find extremely useful called not too tight, not too loose. And it the analogy is like a guitar string. You don't want to crank it too tight, or else if it's too tight or too loose, it's not going to sound good. You need it kind of in the middle. So I think that that approach is really useful when you're dealing with this issue of being single, because on one hand, you do need to leave the house. You do need to do stuff. And to feel better about yourself is certainly going to make it all easier, and it's going to make dating easier. To learn how to be kind to yourself, you'll probably be more kind to the person that you're dating. So all of these things are wonderful things to do, but there's also a point where you have to let go and say, I don't have complete control about this. Maybe I'll meet this person, maybe I won't. I'm just going to live the best life I can and be as open as possible and see what happens.
I'm struck by the idea of this person. as you keep saying, as though it's like there's a person, there is a person out there who is going to be the right person and no other person will do. Is that what you're suggesting?
No, not at all. I think that we all have a number of people who would be great partners for us. I don't believe in that everybody has one soulmate. So yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I think there are lots of people that we could potentially have a great relationship, but not anybody. And you can't will it. If it's not there, it's not there.
How does that relate to as we age? Like, we talk a lot on the show that Ben and I are both in our mid-30s and we both had to have relationships, but we're at the point where the demographics of what you're looking for sort of change and they sort of mellow. What would you say about how one can change their standard of what they're looking for without settling particularly? Like, how does that change as you sort of age a little bit into yourself?
Yeah, I think that people definitely become, as people age, you know, we become more mature. I think that most people, as they become older, they become a little bit nicer and more generous because they realize they've been knocked around a little bit in life. So, and also more sure of themselves. So maybe, I'm so impressed by people who meet people in their early 20s and have these great marriages. I don't quite know how one does that, but it's really cool when it happens. But I think, you know, for me, when I was very young, I probably did have some unrealistic standards when I was in my early 20s. And I think when we're younger, there's a little more narcissism involved, and you want this person to reflect you. And when you're older, and have that confidence in yourself, you can also be more generous with people and just start to appreciate kindness in a way that maybe when you're young, the fact that a guy is in a band and really cute and really cool kind of overrides the fact that he's not that nice to you, if that makes sense.
I have a question.
Yes.
What do you think is a more important part of a relationship or a quality in a relationship or important to being able to maintain a relationship? Finding the right person or being willing to commit to the person you're with?
I really think finding the right person. I think it's a combination because no person is going to be perfect and there's always going to be something there's always going to be some kind of conflict. There's always going to be some kind of compromise. And so you certainly have to decide that, yeah, this quality or this way that we're not compatible, I'm going to work with it. I'm going to live with it. But there has to be a foundation of, because they have all these other qualities and just because we just enjoy each other and it's worth it. And just a basic understanding of a grounding in a certain kind of love and understanding and support so that even when you have those conflicts, you know that this person is still basically on your side. I think that's what matters most.
I have one final question for you before we let you go.
Sure.
You talked with so many women, both professionally and personally, when you were researching this book and in your work in general. Was there one great takeaway that you actually learned from another woman about how to be happy and single at the same time, but still be open to finding love? Is there something that shocked you or something that you really took away that another woman taught you?
I think the thing that most struck me was that the older the women were, the more relaxed they were and the more they didn't take every single date personally. They could just kind of go on the date and enjoy the date for its own sake, regardless of what happened. And another woman I spoke to who was now, you know, she was in a serious relationship, she said, you know, the only thing that I regret about that time was all the time I spent worrying about it. You know, because your life is your life, and you have some control, and there are things you can control and things you can't, but the worry, that really resonated with me. The time that I spent worrying, that just seemed like, I look back on that, and that seemed like a real waste of time.
That was honestly the biggest takeaway I got from reading your book, is that it just sort of gave me another dose of calm as far as like, hey, I do my work as a human being, and I'm single, and I'm happy being single. And I think at one point you quoted a woman who said, like, I have to stop waiting for, oh, when the rest of my life happens. Like, oh, the person I'm going to be with for the rest of my life, because the rest of my life is now. And that honestly was the biggest takeaway that I got from the book, that it's like, hey, the rest of my life being now is pretty awesome. So thank you for that. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for sharing these stories.
Thank you, Sarah. It was lovely meeting you. Thank you for chatting with us. Yeah. And thank you for your book.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, we really appreciate you having you on. You can get Sarah's book, It's Not You, 27 Wrong Reasons Why You're Single. She's on Goodreads. It's on Amazon. You can get her on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you so much for coming on, Sarah. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. And we are going to finish off our show in a complete 180 from what we just talked about with the Online Asshole of the Week Award, because Benjamin, I'm back online dating, and
don't you just love it?
I just love it. So normally if a guy emails me something either just boring, like, hey, nice face, which in my profile I state very clearly, like, don't say about how pretty I am or something in my picture, or like there's a picture of me hugging a tree, and a guy today messaged like, does it matter the size of the tree you hug? Can you believe it? Someone says, does it matter the size of the tree? Or guys will say, like, I wish I were that tree. Or no, they mostly say, I wish I was that tree. But there is one particular guy. His name is, so this is on OkCupid. Normally, I would not be so specific about the person on the radio. But this guy, like I said, is a particular bad person. His profile is Polly Rock, PaulyRock.
Big time.
You told me to.
I know.
Don't feign innocence.
No, I'm not. Trust me. I just can't wait for you to read.
He's 35. He's from Rockaway Park, New York. And he messaged me a couple of times and I didn't respond. Then finally he sent me a message where the end of it, I'll just say, he sent his phone number and said, why do I find women that all's they want to do is type back and forth, waste of fucking time? And so I sent a very quick message saying, hey, thanks, but if I were interested, I would have messaged you before, but good luck out there, is basically what I said. And then he sent, I don't care what you say, waste of time. When you give head, do you spit or swallow? And then I messaged back saying, okay, I just want to read you all of them very quickly and then you can respond. And then I said something back like, it's not appropriate to speak to a woman that way, but good luck out there. I'm trying to be very polite. And then he said, I tell it like it is from a bitch like yourself. I feel good. Thank you very much. Please, God, hear my pray. I hope this woman gets brutally raped and treated like the bitch that she is. Mic drop.
That is the most disgusting, vile, most reprehensible.
I'm glad it bothers
you
so much.
I'm shaking my
clenched fists
right now.
I texted you this last week and you apologized for it. And I said, this is not uncommon. Like, normally I just don't respond because honestly, this often happens where I don't even have to respond. If it's been 24 hours and I don't, a guy will often say something about using the words bitch, cunt, rape, fuck, things like that. And it's not uncommon. And so this one just went, no matter how polite I was, it just ended up in, dear God, hear my pray. I hope this bitch gets...
Hear my pray.
Of course, everything was spelled wrong and it was grammatically incorrect, the entire exchange. And I did report it to OkCupid about a week ago and I've not heard back from them. I just reported the exchange because to me, this kind of person is not... I don't want him on the interweb where women can, I don't know.
Like, I mean, the sad thing is that, like, this exists and that there are just tons of people out there who, through the anonymity of the internet, feel entitled and feel, you know, able and unafraid to say
like
horrible things
and to believe things like that. And in his profile, his very brief profile, which does that, like, if you're on OkCupid, it's like, oh, the, you know, a secret that you want to share about yourself. And a lot of guys, I think it's a waste, will be like, oh, tell me in person, or what I'm doing with my life, living, playing it hard. So what he says he wants is something real with no drama. Yet when I don't respond or when I give something politely back, he talks about bitch, and when I give head, do I spit or swallow? And that he prays to God that I get raped. So this good guy who wants something real with no drama would message that.
I mean, he clearly has either suffered some horrible trauma.
I don't care. Or, you don't,
no, obviously,
yeah,
no, I don't either. I'm just saying,
yeah.
He was
raised wrong, or the whole world in which he lives is just... I mean, I was talking with Liz Smith, our beautiful engineer, before the show about how we're lucky we live in New York City, and we are all, I wish it didn't come to this, and it doesn't always come to this, but we are highly educated people who live in a very liberal city, and we work in the arts. We've got a lot going for us that this is not how we communicate, but there are a lot of people who think it's okay to communicate this way.
And it's sad
and scary
desperate
as a woman.
And
yeah.
Just like it makes me, who like I like to communicate openly, honestly, with love and respect.
And you're one of the most respectful men I've ever known. There's a reason why I love you as much as I do.
And it also just makes me think violent thoughts toward this person that I don't, you know, like.
Or it's Polly Rock 35 from Rockaway Park,
like,
New York.
It's unconscionable to me.
I agree.
But of course, sadly, unsurprising in the world we live in.
It exists. And that's why I don't normally respond, because this is what happens, and that reminds me about how this exists, and I don't like that. So if something happens with OkCupid, I will report back about what has happened. But yeah, so he's our
online
asshole.
Say his username one more time so all of our listeners can go find him on there and give them a piece of their mind.
Or ladies, you know, be careful. He's Polly Rock. He's 35.
Spell that for us.
PAULYROCK on OkCupid. He's 35 from Rockaway Park, New York. And yes, his message was,
why doesn't everyone just go on, even if you don't have an OkCupid account, just go create one and tell, give him a piece of your mind.
Hear my pray. I hope this woman gets brutally raped and treated like the bitch that she is. That's what he said. So I will report back if OkCupid, just to tell you what happens when you report something like that. But other than that, that's our show for today.
We're leaving on that great, positive,
that
happy
note. Last year, we left off with our little social experiment where Ben and I asked some of our exes a series of questions as to why we broke up. And next week, Ben gets to share his answer.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so we're going to bring a psychologist on next week. And I actually will not be here. I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. So I will be
going to miss sitting across from
your
smiling face.
But I will be with a dear friend of both of ours. And I look forward to driving down there tomorrow to see her. So next week, I will be calling in. Which will be weird and fun.
It's gonna
and
be so
silly.
Cold and lonely in here.
I'll warm me up when I get home, I promise. So next week, we're going to talk about what Ben has learned. And then the following week, I will be back and I will be sharing my answers.
Good, because I don't want to be the only vulnerable one
around
here.
I know, we're so vulnerable here. Until next time, our engineer was once again the amazing Liz Smith. Thanks to our sponsor, the Wisconsin Cheese Cupid. Our theme song for this season is You Better You Bet by Robbie Gill. And we are Jacqueline Raposo and Ben Rosenblatt. We'll be back at the same time next week right here at heritageradionetwork.org.
Later.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.